Welcome to Conversations. My name is Marcy West, and today's show is continuing our effort in featuring communities throughout our region. The Village of Ontario was laid out and platted in 1857 by Giles White. It was named Ontario at the request of O.H. Millard after his native county in the state of New York, according to the Wisconsin Historical Society. Ontario sits on the county line with Monroe County at the intersection of State Highway 131 running north to south and Highway 33 running west to east. A population of 540-ish people. And I wanted to feature Ontario on Conversations because in the nearly 30 years that I've lived here, I've found the village to be a really interesting place. Geographically beautiful setting along the Kickapoo River, just west of Wildcat Mountain State Park and north of the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. Originally settled for logging, and who can imagine moving logs down the Kickapoo River to the Wisconsin River and down the Mississippi? But that's how it started, with the logging community, farming, and a variety of other resource-based efforts. So being along the Kickapoo River has some good and some not so good that we'll get into later. But my guest today is Ontario Village President Mike Parr. Mike, let's start with you. Your background and what you do and how you settled into Ontario.
Well, good morning, Marcy. Thank you for having me. As you said, my name is Mike Parr. I've actually lived in Ontario my entire life. I was born in Hillsborough back in 1983, and my mom and dad, they lived in Ontario, which is a little bit strange because they actually were both from the Janesville area, and they moved up to Ontario and were renting a house in town. And I went to the old Ontario grade school up until sixth grade, and then they moved out to where they are right now, out at Brookwood. And like I say, lived there all my life. I'm married to my wife, Caitlin. We've been married now for 9 years, and we have three daughters. Lucy is six, Claire is four, and Anna will be two soon. It's a handful, to say the least, but we're enjoying it all. 2 years ago it was, I became village president. I had served on the board for 5 years prior to that. And so I do have a little experience doing that. That has also been interesting, to say the least. Thankfully, I came in after the flood, so I did not have to deal with that. But as you said, that's some of the good and some of the bad with Kickapoo. But currently, I work at Organic Valley over in Caston. I've been there a little over 2 years, working in the warehouse, and I enjoy that. I only work on the weekends, so it gives me time during the week to hang out with the kids when they're not in school. And beyond that, I've been on the fire department in town in Ontario as well for just past 17 years now already, so which actually seems like it hasn't been that long at all. Yeah. So, and that's a little bit about myself.
Awesome. Well, in your spare time as village president, and the parents of three daughters is going to be incredible as they hit those teen years. That'll be fun. So tell us about the village board and a little bit about the village staff, how the village operates.
Sure. So our village board is made up of seven members. Let's see here. We have John Hansen is on the board, Doug Broxham, Jacob DeWitt, Dylan DeWitt, and Amber McAhose, and Brent Havlick, along with myself, are the board members that make up our village board, obviously. And then we have our village clerk, Terry Taylor, and she's been there over 20 years. I want to say probably closer to 25 years she's been our village clerk. We have two Public Works employees, a main Public Works director, and then another worker that he could run the show if he had to, I guess. And then in the summertime, we hire we hire summer help to kind of do all the lawn mowing and whatnot. And we have a one-man police station, so our entire police staff is our police chief as well. And his office is down in the basement of our library, so he's got it pretty quiet down there. Let's see. I think that's about good. What we got.
Yeah, yeah. And the Terry Taylor, I've known her for years, and sure. Oh my God, what an incredible clerk you have there. I hope she never retires.
I think it's going to be sooner than later, but she definitely has earned her retirement. I know anytime I ever have questions, which is quite often, I can go to her, and most times she's right there with the answer, and I couldn't be happier with the clerk that we have in town.
Yep, exactly, and she's helped other communities as well. So villages succeed by the clerks, that's for sure. And what made you want to get into the village board? I know you, like you said, you've been on there a few years. It's tough with a young family. What made you want to get into local government?
Right. Well, I don't know that I ever wanted to. I guess how it happened was there was an opening. One of the board members was moving out of town, and a lot of times, being in a small village, it's hard to find people to actually run for board and whatnot. So the president at that time called me up and wanted to know if I was interested in filling the seat. And it was only a half a term, so I thought, well, I could get my feet wet and try it, and been on ever since. So, that's kind of how that happened.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit more about Ontario and that logging history that I meant still mentioned still has an influence with, Lamb Hardwoods and the Amish community. Any businesses you want to talk about that make up the village?
Well, I mean, as far as the logging goes, we do have still downtown on the west side of town. We have a logger that still, I don't necessarily know that he's got a lot of business that he runs right there, but a lot of times logs will run through his place that he has. I don't really know what to call it. It's more of a logger storage, I would say. He brings logs in, stores them, and then he'll restack them to ship them out and whatnot. And like you said, Lamb Hardwoods is there. They focus a little bit more, I think, on some finished products like trim and whatnot, and maybe some flooring. And they have dryers there that they dry all their product in, and then they ship that out kind of on a wholesale type of business is what they are.
Yeah. So. Okay. Great. And the basics of a small community. You mentioned the school. Norwalk, Ontario, Wilton is one of those consolidated. It's a
yes.
little north of town, but
yes.
Yeah. Brookwood.
Yep. Yeah. So back in 1995 is when they added on to the high school in Brookwood and bring the elementary kids up there from Norwalk in Ontario. And then I believe in the early 2001 is when Wilton came on board with us. They came from the Royal School District, which would have been Kendall and Elroy as well. They've been growing ever since. They actually just passed their referendum a couple years ago to add a whole bunch of new classrooms and a new gym and a new track. So just about 2-3 weeks ago, they had their first track meet up there at Brookwood, and the cars were crazy how long of a line there was there.
Yeah.
So that's good for the district and good for the villages too, that the three villages that are part of that school district.
Yeah, it really looks like it came together nice, and the construction doesn't look all buttoned up yet, but they're working on it.
Right, right. I think it's still, they have quite a ways to go on it. They're getting a lot of the outside work done now, it seems like. And then I don't exactly know when they're going to be done, but I don't anticipate it being yet this summer yet even. So okay. It's quite a project.
Yep. It's in phases. So
yes.
But yeah, just a beautiful school, beautiful facility, really serves those three communities well, in my opinion. And then some of the other basics, like you mentioned the library, the public library, it's in use all the time.
Yes.
Great events.
Yeah. So our every quarter or so, we get a report from the library director down there. And it seems like every time she gives us a report, the library usage is up, and which is good. And we're part of the Winding Rivers Library System, so you can go down to our library and get books from, you know, anywhere within the surrounding counties even. You know, I think even from La Crosse you can get books and whatnot from there. So, you know, that usage is up, but also just the foot traffic in and out of our library seems like it's been increasing steadily over the, you know, not only this quarter, but over the past several years.
Right.
The library director down there, they do a great job of what they do. They have activities like summer reading for the kids, and they'll have Lego days where they come down and build stuff out of Legos, or like a chess day where they'll come down and play chess. Or they've had movie day with a cop where they'll watch a movie. Kids will watch a movie with a cop and have popcorn and pizza. So they get a kick out of that. And a little bit of free babysitting maybe for the parents for a couple
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, I'm sure it's good for the police officer too to have a little bit of interaction with the younger
yeah,
generation.
Yeah, our police officer, Officer Dave, they call him, he likes interacting with kids. And not just kids, but also the adults in town. But he likes to make the kids feel like, you know, they don't have to be intimidated by the police. The kid, they can come up to him for anything that they need. And he's done a really good job with that. So,
Yeah, I agree. Okay, and then like some of the businesses, if we're walking around the square, it's mm-hmm. you have motel, you have the gas station, the bank has been a, you know, basic for the community
yes.
for many years.
Yep. Yes, we have so we have the motel and the bank, as you said, and then you know, we have our post office on the corner of Main Street. Just going down, then you go, then the library would be down there, and then across the road we have River's End Bar, which Dave does an incredible job of his on Saturday he likes to do ribs and other barbecue stuff, which is unbelievably good. And they just had done some renovations down there to where they added on to their dining area, and then there's a lot of outside seating now out there. And then, you know, going down, there's Wildcat Bar. They are just under new ownership here in the last year or so, and they're doing a really good job. It seems like on any weekend or Friday night, them both places are packed, it seems like, and really hard to get into, it seems. So I would encourage anybody to go down and try them out. They're for a small town. They do a really incredible job of being the restaurants in town, I guess you could say.
Right. So. Yeah. And they both have their specialty. And
yes.
Well, the barbecue on Saturday night, I agree. And then just a little bit outside of town, you have like a string swing.
Yes.
You know, what a unique business to have out in a small community and an employer.
Yeah, yeah. So String Swing, they're between Ontario and Wilton, probably, you know, right around halfway there on Highway 131. They make like custom
guitar holders.
Yeah,
right?
They're holders for just different types of instruments. It's not just, you know, guitars. And they've actually branched out now to make holders for different things such as archery equipment. And I'm probably you know, like gun holders and stuff that you could mount on your wall and hang up whatever you have on your wall. And they've even done some stuff like some custom powder coating for people that have that sort of need, because they have a powder coating room, which is not too easy to find in a small town.
Yeah.
But so yeah, they're a real good. I would even call them an asset to the village. You know, they employ quite a few people from Ontario, and it's nice to have an employer, you know, where we don't have, you know, a 20 or 25 minute commute to get there.
Right.
So
right.
It works out good for the village.
Right. And speaking of employment, you know, you don't necessarily have the businesses to hire a lot, but like you said, a pretty easy commute. And Organic Valley, I assume, is
yeah.
You work in the Cashton one, but
yep.
Lafarge as well. So
yeah.
Most of the people find work, not an issue with that.
Yeah, yeah, no, you know, even if they do have to travel to, say, you know, Sparta or Tomah or out in Viroqua, Ontario is kind of a center point for those three cities. So it's fairly easy for people to find, you know, employment in one of those towns if they're not in, say, Lafarge or Cashton or even at String Swing in Ontario.
Right. Yep. And then, of course, there's still farming in the area, right?
There is a lot of farming in the area, yes, all around, it seems like. So, you know, any of the towns you go outside of town, it seems like there's farms all over the place. So there's opportunities there for people to work on farms, too. A lot of times it's good work for, say, someone for summer work, for someone in high school or something like that. But I actually worked on a dairy farm for the better part of 20 years before I worked at Organic Valley, and it was great. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You definitely gain the work ethic there and get an idea of what they're up against. But, yeah, very fertile soils in the valley bottoms.
Yes.
And things like that. So just an all-around beautiful spot. So, like I said, the Kickapoo River has its advantages and disadvantages. For folks unfamiliar, Brush Creek comes in from the west, basically from Cashton along Highway 33. You're following Brush Creek and empties into the Kickapoo River very close to the intersection of Highway 131 and 33. And so there's been numerous floods through the years, but we'll focus on that recent memory, the historic flood of 2018. Do you remember where you were that day and what you were up to?
Yes, I can remember. As part of the fire department, we were paged out by the county roughly 3 o'clock that morning. Heavy downpours were coming down. Our job was to basically close the roads and make sure everything was out of the way and whatnot. And the rain just kept coming. And I can remember our fire station is actually built up, so it's technically out of the flood stage. It's probably built up 4 or 5 feet off of the road, and the water, it just kept coming up and up and up and up. And you know, eventually it started out coming out of the floor drains in the fire station from the storm sewers, and at that time we pretty much said we're gonna have to leave here. And so I can remember, you know, getting stuff up on tables as much as we could, because our clerk's office is also in the fire station. So we tried to get a lot of her papers up on tables and counters and whatnot. And then, you know, probably 3:30, 4 o'clock, we decided we got to get out of the fire station. And I can remember walking out there in my turnout gear, and I was neck deep in water, just a couple of feet away from the fire station, just getting, you know, going, I guess you would say, north towards town, out of there. And and then it turned to operation of just keeping people away from the flood water. It came up really fast, and it also kind of went down really fast. It was probably by 11 o'clock in the morning or so, the floodwater had pretty much receded down to where we could get back to everything. But then the aftermath of what was left was just mud everywhere, basically. Yeah.
You are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and you're listening to Conversations. My guest today is Mike Parr, who serves as the village president for Ontario, Wisconsin. So continuing just that discussion of the 2018 flood, because that had such an impact, fortunately, no lives lost.
None.
Yeah, and we are all so thankful for that and the heroic work that fire EMT and the officers all did to keep people safe. But then, like you said, that the aftermath, and even though the water in, the creeks go up fast, they go down fast, the Kickapoo goes up, goes down, but boy, does it leave something behind. So you want to talk about how you started the cleanup after the impact?
Yeah. So, just in the days following, the immediate impact was to try to get all the mud off the roads to get traffic flowing again. And then, the businesses, they kind of somewhat took care of themselves. You know, there was people all over town helping them out as well, just getting all the water out and the mud out and trying to see what for damage there was. That process took, weeks to get all that taken care of and to kind of step back and say, okay, here's what we got. After that, then it kind of comes into, well, where do we go from here type thing. Obviously we can't, we had a restaurant in town. They can't, with all their equipment being underwater, they just can't use that anymore. And it becomes to a, sort of a point to where, they're kind of lost, so they end up coming to the village, and then the village looks into, well, where do we go from here? I guess I don't know the exact steps that took, but, eventually FEMA had gotten involved, and
I'll just clarify that acronym is Federal Emergency Management Agency, and FEMA, they're like on site right away for short term, but then they're also they have some programs that communities can use long term.
Right. So basically, what they do is they say you can't go over a certain percentage of your property's value or your business's value to do any repairs. And some of the logic behind that is, they don't want to be paying to rebuild something only to have it flood again, to have it, paying again to have it reflood. It just doesn't make sense to keep doing that. And so what ended up happening is businesses could volunteer and sign up for a buyout program to where FEMA basically buys out a business or a home, and then that land turns into green space for the village. The structures have to be torn down, and then the village can only use that property, like I say, for green space like parks or just even grass and whatnot. And so we had several businesses in town that took that. And then like our community hall was flooded. It was probably 6 feet deep inside the community hall, the floodwater was. And it basically ruined the floor, the structure on the floor, and kind of undermined everything in underneath the community hall, so that ended up having to get tore down.
And that was a lengthy discussion, as I recall, because that was such an interesting design building. Former owner, editor Karen Parker, may she rest in peace, that that she really had her heart into saving that building, and it just couldn't be done.
Yes. It just turned out to be where it didn't make sense financially to do it, and it really wasn't guaranteed that it was going to be safe once we did do it, if we did do it. And so that's where the decision was made to take the building down, and we replaced it here with a new pavilion in its spot. And one of the big draws to the community hall was its unique roof with its arched shape and whatnot. And so we kind of incorporated that into the new pavilion and gave it a same similar roof shape. It's just one of the rules with the FEMA was that we could build that, but it had to be, couldn't have sides on it. So if it was to flood again, the water could just flow through that. And so that's how it's made now.
And it's beautiful.
And it's turned out really good for us. Yes, we have had lots of events in there already here. And it's on a summer day, you get a really nice breeze through there. So it's almost like some sort of air conditioning type thing. But we've had bands there for the 4th of July and whatnot. And we have our farmers market, I'm sure we'll talk about here. They are there a couple of times a month. And so it gets used a lot. And people just go down there and sit, you know, after they're, say, out on the river canoeing or whatnot, they'll come back and they'll sit down and have lunch or something in there. And so that's really nice to have something like that in town.
Right. And during that interim, you actually made use of the old school up on the hill, right, for the community center?
Yeah. So the old grade school that was kind of up on Church Street in Ontario, it had sat pretty much vacant for probably 10 years or so, and it just came up to where the village had an opportunity to buy it from the owners. It was kind of in two pieces. There was a new piece that was constructed probably in the mid-80s or so, and then there was the old structure, an old brick building that was in really rough shape, and we had some engineers look at that, and they just said that was best to come down. So that ended up getting tore down, and then we added on to the newer part, and we have made that into sort of the part that would take the community hall's place for indoor activities, say in the winter time, or if somebody wanted to have like a wedding reception, it could happen up there. And then there's a kitchen up there as well that people can rent if they want to, you know, have something with food or whatnot. So
right.
So that takes place, or takes the place of what the community hall would offer for indoors, and then the pavilion kind of offers, you know, if you want to have an outdoor activity in the same location as where the pavilion was, or the community hall was at.
Right, yeah. And again, with small communities, those kind of become the hub or the heart of a community. And
right.
After a disaster, people feel like they've lost their community, but it just kind of gets reconfigured. But
yes.
The other thing I want to encourage people to visit is the perennial garden and the history walk right there, you know, in the same, basically the same block.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. That is over in Palin Park, and it would be just a little bit to the north of where our pavilion is at. So the gentleman that takes care of it, he puts in an insane amount of hours taking care of those plants that are there, and it's got walkways and benches for you to sit on, and it's just
playground for the kids.
There's a playground for the kids, yep, and then there's a little cabin there. It's like a visitor center where you can get information on stuff around in and around Ontario. But yeah, just to walk through them gardens, you know, and like I say, one person pretty much takes care of it, and he just does an incredible job with that.
Yeah, and in the history signs, you can learn about the ginseng and lumbering and the river, and yeah, so it's just a really nice park for a small town. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about with the pavilion that I thought was genius was to turn it into an ice skating rink in the winter.
Yeah. So probably 2 years ago, we had a gentleman approach the village about putting an ice skating rink somewhere in town. And through the brainstorming and whatnot of several of us, he found a setup down, I think, around Chicago or so that was being sold. And so he went down and got it, and they set it up, and the fire department filled the water up with it. And, the first year we did it, it was kind of a warm winter, so it didn't work out exactly how they had planned it. But last year we set it up, and it worked out well. They have skates down there for people to use if they don't have their own skates. They've had a couple of sort of grand opening type events down there that were really successful. And it's pretty much a come as you want type thing. There's yeah. there's no like fee or anything like that for them to do it. They can just come down and learn to skate, and they don't have too many eyes on them, so if they fall down, that's okay too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's just a great idea for a pavilion in the winter, and especially when we can't be dependent on snow anymore. But if we can,
yes.
if we can get cold, it's great for the kids and adults, like you said.
Sure.
But yeah, so again, the network of volunteers and brainstorming, and you have a community club that
yes.
kind of works with the village, as I understand it,
yeah.
to come up with things for.
Yep. Yeah, so we have a community club that's probably made up of probably 15 members or so, and they do events throughout the year to just bring people together type things. So they'll have an event at Halloween. They'll do the trunk or treats right on the village square. And then they have, across the road from that is a youth center that one of the churches has, and they'll have hot dogs and hot chocolate, depending on the weather and whatnot, and popcorn. And then right across the road from that is the pavilion where people can go and get, hang out and get out of the weather a little bit if they
yeah.
want to. But the community club, they support events such as that, and they do a lot of work on the 4th of July and just other times throughout the years. They help selling food at different events in town and whatnot, and they just really do a lot to help support the community.
Right, and that's all part of the recovery as well. But
yep.
so after the flood, 2018, and you're working with FEMA, and it's no secret that the wheels of federal government turn slow.
Sure.
But then you're working with an engineer and have a bigger plan for some of those businesses or homes that were lost. You want to talk about what the new development's going to be?
Yeah, sure. So just on the southwest side of town, we had an opportunity to purchase 40 acres of land from one of the local farmers that had retired. And kind of ironically, it was in the works before we even had the flood to do this expansion project. And so the village purchased the land from these retired farmers, and then the flood kind of happened. So then that actually kind of put this expansion project on hold for a little while, just because we had to deal with all the flood and all the aftermath and whatnot. And now here, through grants from the USDA and CDBG, and then also through HUD, we had gotten a bunch of grant monies to start developing this 40 acres that we had. So what we did is we built a road in between that would connect Highway 33 and 131, and then the plan was to have two cul-de-sacs going, branching off of those roads. the funds that we got now, we were able to do that road plus one of the cul-de-sacs. And then the plan for the what we were going to do with the land was we're going to have it be a mixture of residential as well as commercial lots available. So this past summer in 2024, those roads got built, and we put up for sale the residential ones in town, and there was 11 lots for residential, and it only took probably 4 months, and they all got spoken for.
Great.
And so part of the agreements with the village was that they have to build within 1 year of owning them lots, so our fingers are crossed that everything goes well. We should have somewhere between 11 and 15 new houses in town here this summer yet.
Wow.
So, and then the commercial side of things, that moves a little bit slower, but we're looking for businesses that would want to come to town and build in Ontario. So there's opportunities there for people if that is something they would be looking to do.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, the housing is definitely needed, right?
Yes.
Affordable housing.
For sure, for sure.
It's an issue. So just back to the support given, the Community Development Block Grant is,
yes,
CDBG.
Yes.
And so that's a mix of federal and state and local support. Correct.
You. Yeah, from what I understand, yes, that it's kind of a federal agency that runs it all, and it's kind of who we dealt with. But yeah, it seems like it's sort of a mix, and we were able to secure a grant from them for $1 million to as part of this whole
awesome
New development program.
New development. Yep. Great. Okay, we are talking with Mike Parr. He's the village president for the Village of Ontario in Vernon County, and you are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and let's get to some of the fun stuff coming up for the Village of Ontario. We didn't talk much about the canoe liveries, but this small town of Ontario goes from 540 population, and then on a summer Saturday, you have thousands of people visiting.
Yes.
Did I count right? Is there five canoe shuttle services? Canoe, kayak, and tubing?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's four or five of them. I can't, but yeah. Any given Saturday, if you come in the summertime and the weather's nice, our population probably triples in the summertime. And it, you know, it goes from first part of May probably through mid October. I would say there's a lot of people that come for the colors in the fall as well to go downtown. And Ontario wouldn't be what it is without the canoe businesses in town. They just bring so many people to town and you know, support for our businesses in town as well, that they're just great.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it is just such a unique opportunity because the Kickapoo River is so popular and so beautiful. So it's great to hear that they also support the community efforts, and I know each one of the owners probably has another or a couple hats that they wear. But also, you know, high schoolers, what a great job in the summer,
yeah,
to throw canoes or kayaks on,
yeah,
and
yeah,
take people on the river.
Yeah, it is a good opportunity for the kids, you know, like you said, to build start building a good work ethic. Hauling canoes can be a demanding job, I would say. You know, long hours on the weekends for sure, and you know, hot weather and hard work, and there's probably, you know, each canoe place probably hires, you know, four or five, six, seven maybe, kids in the summertime to haul canoes back and forth. And with the amount of of people we have canoeing during the day on them weekends. It's a lot of work. You know, there's even, I would imagine some of them canoes even go out twice a day. On some people that have shorter trips.
Yeah. Our son did it for a summer or two and, met people from all over the world and obviously helped the bank account to go to college. So
yes.
Highly recommend that as well. So with that number of people you mentioned being on the fire department, does that bring about any additional training needed for rescues off the river or anything like that?
As far as training, I'm not really. We just, kind of somewhat train on the fly, I guess. There's times where we'll get a call to a thunderstorm pops up and there's 10 people still out on the river and we got to go and in between bridges and whatnot and help find them and get them back to land. The river, the river is not, a huge river as far as how wide or big it is, but for someone that's out of town, it can be, a scary event if they get caught in one of them storms and whatnot. And so we have gone out on calls where we have to, help the canoe businesses out and make sure we get all of their customers back safe.
Right. And like you said, then there's that support from for the businesses, the restaurants, the gas station, things like that from those visitors. And then potentially some of them find what a beautiful area it is. And now with working remotely or anything, I've met a few people that are like, "Ooh, I could live here."
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. A lot of the views that we have with the bluffs and with Wildcat and stuff, they're unique to where we're at, and it's just something that people, if they're not coming back to live here, they keep coming back for stuff like that, between the canoeing and just the small community that we are. They kind of like that atmosphere, it seems.
Exactly. Yeah, and Wildcat Mountain State Park has events going on all the time, and this year celebrating 125 years of the state parks, there will be special events with them as well. So the scenic drives, the river, bicyclists, horseback riders, a little bit of everything comes through Ontario.
Yeah. If you like being outside, it seems like Ontario is a place for people to come visit.
It's not
you don't hear about it all the time, but word of mouth does wonders for right. stuff like that.
Exactly. And it's such a unique name. I remember getting calls about the name Ontario, the only Ontario in Wisconsin. We're not talking about Canada.
Yeah.
So again, this summer coming up, farmers market. You have a farmer's market at that new pavilion?
Yeah, so the community club, that's one of the things that they help sponsor. They're going into, I believe, their fourth year with that. It's the second and fourth Fridays of every month. This year they're starting it in June, so the 13th of June is going to be the first farmer's market where they have vendors come out, local vendors come out and sell their products, and then every once, they'll do different things. They'll do bingo every once in a while, and sometimes they have like a band come out. There's an ice cream trailer that is right next to the pavilion there, so people can go over there and get ice cream and sit down at the picnic tables, and whether they're shopping or not, they can just, again, enjoy the atmosphere of the whole thing.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, it's a great spot, great location, and now that I have flexible time, it worked out great last summer that you could go paddle the river, and then when you go back for pickup, you hit the farmer's market and the food trucks on a Friday afternoon.
Yes, that works out good. I believe they start at 4 o'clock, the farmer's market does. It goes from 4 till about 7. Every night. So yeah, if even getting off of work or whatnot, coming through town or whatever, it's always good to stop in and see what they got. It's not the same every week, so So, yeah.
It was an interesting mix of baked goods and Amish goods and all sorts of things. Beautiful. And again, such a great setting for it. And then your 4th of July event always is on the 4th?
Yes. It's always on the 4th. Sometimes a lot of times it's spread out over a few days, but the main day is on the 4th. It starts out generally in the morning. They have their pancake breakfast at the pavilion again, another event for that. And then they have a run for fun. They have duck races. They have tractor pulls there. There's vendors out on the street over by the square, and kids pedal pulling they have, and then fireworks at pretty much at dusk, and then there's other activities that happen the day before, and then the day after there's a kiddie parade the day before, and then they have cowboy church they have down at the pavilion. And then I believe this year, I think the 4th is on a weekend, so I think that Saturday after or the day after the 4th, they're having a big tractor pull in town.
Yeah, yeah, great. And like you've mentioned before, the fall colors bring like a whole nother wave of visitors and the hunting and fishing as well into the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. So when the fall colors, you know, and it's not just Ontario, but in Ontario, the fall colors are really hard to beat. With all the bluffs, you know, you look out to the east and there's Wildcat, and even to the west when you go towards Caston and whatnot. It's just something that's hard to put into words how that looks. You know, it's almost like you're in the middle of a painting, it seems like. And there's people that come from all over, you know, that live in the cities. They'll come and drive through for a day just to see that kind of that fall foliage.
Yep, I agree. And it's just such an incredible attraction. So the events are nonstop. It's not just a couple months of the year. They're year round, and that whole community network that has come together for the recovery. Again, I just can't emphasize enough how important that was to see after the flood. Although I do have a memory of it seemed like quite a bit after the flood that people were still reporting canoes turning up in various spots. And then Scott Lind figured out a way to get, it was like an ice chest or a floating refrigerator or something from the gas station that made it all the way down into Wildcat.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff floated down the river that day. And you know, as wide as the river got that day, you know, they were finding picnic tables and canoes, and LP tanks were a big thing that started floating down, and they would find them out in the middle of fields, you know, months afterwards, you know, 10, 15 miles away from where they had originated. And I know our clerk in town, Terry, her screen on her computer is, if you go into Ontario, there's a sign that says 131 and 33, and there's a picnic table lodged up on top of that sign, and somebody had taken a picture of that, and somehow it got back to Terry, and that's her background on her computer. And when people see that, they say, well, somebody must have put that there. Well, then she, you know, that's the flood put that there.
Yeah. So. I had family out in California that sent me it. It had made national news. So that was a famous picture. But but again, I mean, this is a good opportunity to talk to folks about the flashiness of that river and that you don't want to be caught off guard. So it's really important to have your weather alerts on, right?
Yes.
I use Nixle. I don't know if there's another one that the emergency response recommends, but
yeah, no, just keeping an eye on you know, weather, knowing the forecast. You know, if like a thunderstorm is forecast for the day, just keep an eye on the radar. You know, if you know, the canoe people do a really good job of, if bad weather is in the forecast, they generally don't let people go down, because you know, they don't want to put people in danger you know, it's more important to come back another day type thing. But yeah, with having the two rivers sort of meet right in town and on a low spot, it doesn't take much for that water to start backing up. And then once it does, it's really, you know, it just expands because there's really no place for it to go. And it's hard. It's bad to say, but they just happen every once in a while. So we kind of come accustomed to knowing how to prepare for them down there. And people do a really good job of that. But at the end of the day, they still happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We want everybody to have fun and be safe. You know, the basics of life jackets on the little ones, because the Kickapoo looks gentle, but you know, you can get into trouble. So put the life jackets, the PFDs on the kids.
And, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's even somewhat required that even all the adults have to at least have a life jacket in the canoe with them when they go out.
Yeah.
And some they have some other flotation devices that they can send out if they want them.
Yeah, that's great. So wrapping up, anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to talk about with Ontario of anything going on or coming up that you want
folks to? Yeah, well, just, you know, our 4th of July event that comes up, keep an eye out for posters. The community club meets here a couple times before that, and I'm sure they'll be designing posters and coming up with a schedule of events for that. That's our big day in town.
Farmers markets.
The farmers markets are happening throughout the summer, starting in June. Even just to come by and see what it's all about. Check out our new pavilion, you know. We had an event a couple years ago where we could have people sponsor a picnic table to put into the pavilion. And, you know, we didn't know how that was going to go. And within a couple of weeks, we probably had the money for 40 picnic tables.
Yeah.
And we actually had to turn people away from giving because we didn't have a place to go with the picnic table. So there's, you know, places to sit down there and whatnot. But, yeah, just come down to Ontario or up to Ontario and check it out.
Yep. That's great. Yeah. Again, the basics of community success, the combination of the volunteers and just all the support that comes through that. So I just want to thank you so much for coming in today. I am a big fan of the Village of Ontario and also encourage people to make sure and visit if you haven't been there. And if you have, go back and see it again between the pavilion and the garden walk. Really a great place to visit on a nice spring, summer, fall day. So, you've been listening to Conversations on WDRT 91.9 FM, recorded at the WDRT studio in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and I'd like to thank our guest, Mike Parr from the Village of Ontario, and I'd also like to thank Steve Brandle for technical assistance. You can find recordings of this and other conversations in the WDRT archives webpage at wdrt.org. Thank you.